The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Anthony Robles. Remember Anthony? I'm sure you do. Anthony, of course, one of our legends in the Valley. He was born without his right leg. He went to Arizona State in wrestling. He ended up winning an NCAA championship. He's been in the motivational speaking world. He is now the head wrestling coach over at Mesa High School. He is trying to set a Guinness Book of World Records in a couple of weeks. I want to get caught up with Anthony on a whole bunch of things that he's involved in. We'll have Anthony Robles with us. And then Coop. Bruce Cooper and I are going to chop up what happened with the Suns over the weekend. It was just miserable. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their longstanding support. I am moving my mom today to Kansas. When I'm done with this show, we're going to catch a flight to Wichita. I never knew it was so hard to get to Wichita. And then I'm going to roll her off the plane. She's in a chair. She's almost 90. And I'm going to come up to security where my brother's son is supposed to meet us. And I can't cross the line because if I cross the line, then I have to go back through security. And the flight that we're taking leaves to come back to Phoenix 45 minutes after we land. So I've got that on my mind today a little bit. That doesn't mean I'm not into this because I'm a paid professional. Look, the Suns, the whining about officiating has got to stop. If you're going to go down the first metric of what you say is the officials are terrible, I don't know, welcome to sports. And in this day and age in sports, if a team loses, it's always somebody else's fault. It's kind of like a microcosm of society. If things don't go well, well, it's their fault. It's their fault. Well, sometimes you need to look in the mirror, okay? And when I look in the mirror and see the Suns, okay, what I see, if they were to look in the mirror, is a team that talks way too much about stuff that they can't control. And if they think that working over officials, like if Scott Foster, I actually hope Scott Foster walks out of the tunnel. Scott Foster, if you haven't followed it closely, fans are all wound up about Scott Foster because Chris Paul pointed out he's never won a game, playoff game, that Scott Foster has officiated. So it's got to be the ref's fault. Like yesterday was the ref's fault because, I don't know, Dallas hit 23 pointers. So it's the ref's fault. The Chris Paul fouls, a couple of them were cheap. No question about it. But I, to say that was the ref's fault is just lazy. It is. If you're always going to go down that path, you know, it doesn't matter what sport you're in. If an umpire throws out Madison Bumgarner and then turns around and says, I'm sorry, I screwed up, it's my mistake, then I have to trust the integrity of that umpire the next time he's behind home plate and Mad Bum is pitching. He's not going to hold anything against him. Yeah, there was a rogue referee. To think that there aren't referees that don't have agendas, but they cannot control an entire game for a certain period of time. They can't do it. And the Suns lost yesterday. It was 23 pointers and Chris Paul not playing very well and Devin Booker having a quiet 35. And yet, in the post game, it was like 2 minutes in before the topic of officiating was in the rearview mirror. I don't know why it always gets brought up. I don't. It's when a team loses, they lose. You can't just always go to that one. The idea of talking at great length about Chris Paul's mom and family having been shown poor, I don't say poor, having fans around them act in a way that is unbecoming and should never, ever, ever happen is an old topic. It happens at sporting events. Doesn't mean it's right. I'm not excusing it. It's just it happened. You could tell Chris Paul did not want any part of the postgame press conference. I was watching it, and he kept saying, am I good? Am I good? Is this long enough? And he wanted to go handle it. And it looked like it was a kid. Doesn't matter. Not excusing it. But there's just a lot around this weekend in Dallas that was a lost weekend. It makes you wonder if DeAndre Ayton is worth $200 million. Any players, they worth $200 million. But DeAndre Ayton has not played like the max player that you want him to be. It may well be. These are all fair questions, I think, to start asking. Team doesn't get out of this round. I still think they will. But are they a team that's just a nice team built for the regular season? It's a very fair question to ask. The team photo is not going to come back the same next year. It's just not. And Jason Kidd has found some things. I thought he took a little cheap shot at Chris Paul and some of his comments about they've learned a lot from Chris. And Chris knows how to play with fouls and get fouls, and which is a way of talking about flopping. I don't know if Jason Kidd and Chris Paul liked one another. I don't know the backstory there, but I thought his comments yesterday were interesting. But all in all, look, they're in a fist fight. This stuff's not going to be easy. And if you're going to play putrid perimeter defense, because you can't just say, well, they hit their shots. Yeah, some of it, but I felt that the perimeter defense wasn't good. Plain and simple. So here we are at 2-2. Coop and I are going to chop that up here coming up at 10:35. James Harden, the demise of James Harden has been a topic of conversation. And all James Harden did last night is pour through 31. He hadn't scored like 30 points or more since January, and he was still with Brooklyn. Again, postseason basketball versus regular season basketball. I think Richard Jefferson was talking yesterday about how you don't pick up players off the floor in postseason basketball on the other team, but you do during the regular season. That tells you all you need to know, which goes back to, you know, get all excited about winning a whole bunch of games and how great things were, but it doesn't mean a damn thing this time of year. It just doesn't. The Diamondbacks did something interesting over the weekend. They called up their number one prospect, Alek Thomas. Alek Thomas, outfielder, had a double in his game yesterday. So in his major league debut, he gets a base hit. Diamondbacks win. Post game's very nice. He brings mom down on the field. They have a magical moment. It's great TV. Todd Walsh is taking it in. It was beautiful. Reminded me, though, of Justin Upton. Think back to when Justin Upton, a first-round pick, was brought up to the Diamondbacks. And what did the Diamondbacks do that to this day I think was just a brutal decision? Just poor, poor, poor decision. And had marketing all over it. And that is, they created this spot called Uptown. Justin Upton was 19. They stuck him in right field. They had Uptown out there. Everything was Uptown, Uptown, Uptown. They're trying to get people interested to come out and watch Justin Upton and watch on television. The marketing side of it took over rather than the baseball side. I understand Torrey Lovello gets the lineup sent down the chute to him. He's in one of those managerial positions where he's being told what to do, who to do, and all that. Oh, the team's playing well. I'm about playing kids. I am. I just hope we don't start to see stuff that shouldn't happen, where it's all thrown on a kid rather than you're just part of the team. Just part of the team. Let's not create something that is forced, something that reminds me of Justin Upton, because that didn't go well in any way, any shape, or any form. In terms of what they're doing on the field, Zach Gallen pitched as well as anybody in Major League Baseball. That's right, as well as anybody in Major League Baseball. 7 innings, 7 strikeouts. Against Colorado yesterday. And here they are in a spot where now they have Miami rolling into town, who's not a great team, who they just took advantage of back in Florida. String together some wins. But in the next, what is it, the next 10 days, they got a whole bunch of games with the Dodgers coming up. I'm excited to see how they respond. You know, they've got a series there. They've got a series here. I'm excited to see how they respond to playing the Dodgers. Because, you know, when you have a young team that has some success, I think they're 4.5 back. I think they're a game out of last place. They're at 500. The National League, the West, is clearly the division of power. Can you get some games? Because usually what happens is the Diamondbacks get off to a good start, and then they run into the Dodgers around July 1, and the Dodgers just blow them out of the water. Well, Diamondbacks have gotten off to a good start now. You know, they were slow the first few games for sure, but look at how they fought back, how they've clawed back. They bring up their best prospect now. A lot of things that are interesting to look at, to take in, to consume. So I'm looking forward to that. F1 was over the weekend. Formula One in Miami. And I'd like to see Phoenix get in on this. So Austin, Texas is the other city this year that's going to have an F1 race. Vegas is going to have one. Why can't we? I mean, seriously, you've got to look at the marketplace and understand that college football playoff, I would not be surprised if the Fiesta Bowl just continues to get knocked down, and Vegas takes over and the CFP or whatever the new makeup is at some point. Super Bowl rotation with Vegas coming on board and Los Angeles, hard to compete with West Coast Super Bowls when you have those two markets. Maybe we get fortunate for another one. The NFL always takes care of new stadiums. So F1 was the story over the weekend. You had Tom Brady and Michael Jordan together taking it all in. Star power, dollars. F1 was the most searched Google item over the weekend. Got to look at this stuff. It's not all about balls and bats. It's the business side too. All right, Anthony Robles on the other side. It's always good to catch up with Anthony. It is a great story that he has been through and through here in the Valley. We'll have Anthony Robles and then Bruce Cooper. On a Monday, I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, I wanted to chop it up with Anthony Robles for a number of reasons. He is the head wrestling coach at Mesa High School, his alma mater. He has decided to do something really cool to raise funds, which I'll let him tell you about. Desert Financial is one of our partners, and I saw that. It's like now he's a spokesperson for them, so there's this business side. And the first time, and I told Anthony this off the air, but I'll just restage it. The first time I sat with Anthony Robles was in May 2008, when it was announced that Arizona State was likely going to cancel, get rid of the wrestling program. And now here you are, all these years later, an NCAA champion, a motivational speaker, stuff on ESPN. Of course, Anthony born without his right leg. And he has accomplished so much. With that as an intro, where do you want to start? Where do you want to start on what you're doing these days? It's good to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you as well. Time flies. I remember the moment we met, or we were talking when ASU dropped their wrestling program. So we've both come a long way.
That's it. All right. So let's get over to Mesa High School and what you're doing there. And we'll get into the fundraising part in a second. But you decided to get back to your alma mater with the path that you've taken, Anthony. Why high school wrestling?
Well, to be honest, you know, my main career is a motivational speaker, and you know, I'm always doing Q&A sessions after my events, and I constantly get the question, where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years? I've always gotten that question, and my answer has always been the same thing. I see myself as being a high school wrestling coach, and the place I wanted to be was Mesa High School. And the reason for that was growing up, I really didn't have a strong father figure in my life, and my wrestling coaches became those father figures to me, you know, that they helped me through my wrestling journey, as I like to call it. And wrestling is, in itself, it helped me to kind of find my sense of belonging, you know, helped me to find my identity, to get comfortable in my own skin. And so just the lessons that I learned going through that, I really wanted to be able to turn around and give back, you know, to say thank you, to give back to the sport and give back to the school that had given me so much and to help me to find these opportunities. So that's what it's all about now for me, is just giving back to that place that has helped me so much in my life.
You know, it's interesting. I have a son who has gone through wrestling. He's gone through a lot of trauma, two major surgeries in high school. He's at Castile with Bob Callison. He's at Castile with Frank Torres, two great makers of men. And I see the benefits of wrestling away from just the match in the moment. If you could speak to that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many great lessons that wrestling teaches you. Just that accountability, you know, how hard you work is going to determine how well you do out there on the wrestling mat. And also just being comfortable, being confident in yourself and independent. The lessons that you learn going through it, those are the things that help me. Never giving up. You know, when it looks like the score is out of your grasp, when it looks like an opponent is too big to overcome, you keep fighting. You know, you never give up. You never let the challenge become an excuse. I mean, there's so many lessons that the sport has taught me going through that I've been able to take in my life, you know, in my business, in my relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing most of all that it taught me was to always give your best. You know, it doesn't matter so much the end result of winning, of being on the podium, of getting the trophy. If you give your best and you can turn around, you can walk away knowing, you know what, that was my 100% effort. You know, I know that I did everything that I could to be successful. And to me, that is success, just giving your best in all that you do.
If wrestling hadn't found you, if you hadn't found wrestling, where would you be today?
To be honest, I really have no idea. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew growing up for a little while, I thought I wanted to be a sports agent. And, you know, I thought I wanted to play football, but I was 90 pounds as a freshman in high school. You know, obviously I didn't become a sports agent. And so, you know, wrestling, just going through it, I mean, it gave me my friends. It, like I said, it taught me those lessons. And then it also gave me an opportunity to travel locally to speak to local middle schools and junior highs early on in my speaking career, and to figure out that I really had a passion to give back, you know, to help motivate others as they wrestle through challenges in their own personal lives. Mm-hmm. So, you know, wrestling just gave me that platform to really just build my life from. So I have no idea where I'd be without it. And I'm just blessed that my cousin forced me one day to try it out, and it completely changed my life. So
Anthony Robles with us for a couple of minutes. Get ready to write down something, because he's got some information coming up here in a moment on how you can help him over at Mesa High School. When you are on the speaking circuit, what do you say to CEOs and business leaders different than you say to high school kids?
Well, to be honest, my message is the same. Mm. And it's all about this theme of being unstoppable. And what I like to say is, you know, in life, it doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, we all wrestle with a challenge. And you know, that challenge can be physical, it can be mental, it can be work, it can be relationships. There's always a challenge in life. And despite the challenge that you personally face, you have a decision. You can either let the challenge become your excuse and say, I can't do it because of this, this, or this, and just give in. Or you can tell yourself, you know what, I'm unstoppable. I'm going to figure out a way to get this done, to reach my goal. It doesn't matter what I have to wrestle to get there. And the phrase that we use a lot is, you grind now, you shine later. Mm. You know, the grind is uncomfortable. The grind is the hard work. It's the setback sometimes. But if you're willing to grind, you can be unstoppable. Just don't let those challenges become your excuses.
You went over on the business side, and you've done quite a bit of business, but you're now a spokesperson for Desert Financial. Desert Financial is one of our main sponsors, our title sponsor. Jeff Mishi is great people. They're tied in with Arizona State in a strong way. When I heard about this, I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense. A win, a win.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so honored to be a part of the Desert Financial family. And our ties go way back. Believe it or not, my mom, actually, when I was in high school, my mom worked at the Desert Financial branch on Stapley and Germain. So okay. I remember going to visit her at lunch breaks and just meeting everybody there. And I mean, just what that organization stands for. You know, just that integrity, that giving back. We were very much aligned, and just our passion to give back to our community, to Arizona. And so it was just a perfect match. And I'm really excited to see the good things that we're going to do together in the future, you know, working together to give back. And there's so many great people there. You know, I'm truly blessed. It's crazy to think of where I am today, you know, and these opportunities. And Desert Financial is an amazing opportunity just to be their spokesperson and be part of that group. So I'm very thankful.
Small world with mom working there.
Definitely a small world.
That's really cool. All right, a couple other things to get you out of here. What are you doing with pull-ups that people can get involved in to help out your program at Mesa High School?
Yes, sir. So, you know, I created a fundraiser, and basically on May 25th, I'll be making an attempt at breaking the Guinness World Record for most pull-ups in 24 hours. Hmm. And right now the record is 7,715. So that's what I'm training to beat. It's going to hurt. But the goal is to raise money for our wrestling program, you know, to fundraise for their program to help us get to that next level. And so we created a fundraiser called Pennies for Pull-Ups. So basically people can support me and donate a penny for every pull-up they want to support me in. And we've actually just created a fundraising page on 99pledges.com. The best and easiest way to find that link is just to go to my social media on Instagram and Twitter. It's at A Robles, R-O-B-L-E-S, 125. So A Robles, 125. We have a link right there. People can click. It'll go directly to our Pennies for Pull-Ups fundraiser, and they can donate and just spread the word. You know, I would really appreciate it. And, you know, just trying to give back to my program. And like I said, I believe we can get to that next level. We have the kids, they're hardworking. We just need the funds to support that next level jump.
Okay. Do you have any pinch pull-up guys, gals? Is it just all you pinch? Like, hey, take a break. One, you know, years ago, I sat in every seat at Chase Field back in the day, Bank One Ballpark. And I did it for charity. It was before it was the first season of the Diamondbacks. And I lived there for 3 days, stand up, sit down, stand up, sit down. But I started getting tired and I had pinch sitters that came in for me. Are you thinking of something along those lines? Or it's like, Brad, I'm going to blow right through this goal.
I wish I had some pinch pull-up people for me, but it's going to be all me this one. You know, we have a strategy going in. I think bare minimum, you know, I'd have to hit 5 pull-ups every minute for 24 hours. I don't feel like going 24 hours straight. So my goal early on is to hit 10 to 12 for the first couple hours and then break it down from there. So it's going to hurt. It's going to be all me, but it's for a great cause. So I'm ready for it.
No question about it. How do you train for that? Anything different that you're doing? Diet, water, all that stuff? You know, it's coming up here quick.
Yeah, definitely diet. Hydrating is crucial. And, you know, as it's coming closer, I've kind of really just, I just trimmed down on my training. You know, beforehand, leading up to this, we would do little mini events. You know, I would go 6 hours or 9 hours, and we would slowly increase the increment of pull-ups per minute that I would do. So, you know, we had a strategy for it, but now it's basically just making sure I'm injury-free leading up to this thing. And, you know, I'm keeping my body just prepared. So, you know, I'm ready to go. I'm confident. It's been a long time of training. I've trained for over a year and a half now, but I'm ready to roll. So
listen to you when you're talking about little media events. Hey, Brad, I'm doing little media events, 6 to 9 hours of pull-ups. Come on, man. That sounds brutal.
It took a bit to get there, but I'm confident now.
Yeah. All right. Well, before you get out of here, then last time to plug it where people can go so they can write it down.
Yes, sir. So you can visit my social media. It's on Twitter and Instagram at arobles125. And our fundraiser is called Pennies for Pull-Ups. And it's also on 99 Pledges. But the easiest way is my social media at arobles125.
Okay. And people can watch this live. Can I come down there and just like watch you do your thing? Or is this going to be streamed or anything?
Actually, yes, it's going to be streamed on all of my social media pages. I know we're still working the kinks out right now, but it sounds like ESPN and Guinness will be showing it on their social media.
Wow.
And we'll be announcing here shortly the actual event site where I'll be doing the pull-up attempt. And we will be opening that up to public. So if they want to come out and support me and just to, you know, check things out, they're more than welcome to. But I believe we'll be announcing that later this week, probably on Wednesday or Thursday. So,
All right. Sounds good. We'll keep an eye on it. Thanks, Anthony, to catch up. Good stuff. Good luck.
Well, thank you so much for your support. I appreciate it.
Good to see Anthony Robles, one of the Valley legends. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, time to chop it up with the one and only Bruce Cooper on the Suns and Mavericks, because here we are. 2-2. Are you surprised, first and foremost?
I'm very much surprised. I mean, look, that first round series against the Pelicans, that was, I said, wow, now that the Suns got by that round, you know, whew, that kind of deal. I mean, this Mavericks series should be much like Phoenix saw last year with the Denver Nuggets. Yep. I was thinking 4-0, for at worst 5-1, but heck, here we are, 2-2, Brad.
Yeah. I mean, Bruce, what I feel like, you know, Jason Kidd said something after Sunday's game where he just kind of mentioned casually, you know, I played against Chris Paul and, you know, we're learning a lot from Chris Paul on how to, you know, get into the bonus and how to go about fouls being called, which is code for he's flopping. And I don't know if Jason Kidd cares much for Chris Paul. That's just one observation. And I know the officiating has taken over everybody's line. I get tired of that stuff. Let's just start with Jason Kidd. Now he's coached against Monty here.
Well, look, I don't think that Jason Kidd has near the advantage that we saw Willie Green have with the Pelicans last series. So, yeah, I saw those comments from Jason Kidd. I just merely washed them away. I mean, I think they have no relevance. Zero, to be honest with you. But I will say this about Chris Paul. You know, prior to game three, when the Suns were up 2-0, I think Friday's game three, Paul turned 37 years old. Mm-hmm. And I saw a headline that asked, is this the best version of Chris Paul that we've seen? It made me go, you know, I thought back to the 2 19-point fourth quarter games he had in the series against the Pelicans. Yeah. I also thought back to that perfect 14-for-14 field from the field, a shooting game he had against the Pelicans in that closeout game. And I'm like, you know what? I might be inclined to say, yes, this is the best version of Chris Paul that we've seen. But then there's a 7-turnover game on his birthday night. And I said, okay, all right. He had too much going on. So I fully expected to see him come back in yesterday's game four and just maybe turn another one of those masterpiece games that we saw in this first series against the Pelicans. But Brad, I mean, he was making mistakes that don't belie his persona as the point guard. I mean, the foul trouble. I mean, some of the silly stuff. I mean, look, I'll be the first to admit, I thought a couple of those fouls were very, very ticky-tacky.
See,
I mean,
they were cheap. Very five and six were ones you could go either way on. There's no question about it.
Yeah, but that aside, Brad, that aside, I mean, he still didn't look like what I expected him to look like for Sunday's game four. So I'm thinking, okay, he's saving it for the fourth quarter. But, Brad, the man only played four freaking minutes in the entire second half yesterday. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and a lot of that came on, you know, the lack of brilliance, for lack of any of a better phrase or term, that you come to expect from Chris Paul. I mean, it was very befuddling. I just said, my gosh. I mean, that stat line, more fouls than points.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. Is he hurt, do you think, Bruce? You know, when I'm watching him, you know, there's always this thing. You know how it is in playoffs. Oh, I'm fine. It's similar to what we saw last year in the postseason where, you know, Chris isn't playing well, then all of a sudden it comes out. Well, yeah, he's hurt. And it was a bigger injury, obviously. But I'm looking at him like, okay, something's not right because Dallas just making adjustment doesn't suddenly shut him down.
Yeah, that's a very good point. But see, Brad, I didn't see any like okay, let's look at Friday's game four. I mean, there were a couple of unforced turnovers where he just lost the ball out of bounds, and it looked like, okay, he hurt that shoulder again. It looked like that series against the Lakers when, I mean, he couldn't even dribble the ball with his hand. I mean, I'll give you that for Friday. I saw no indication of that Sunday. But I will tell you a major difference that I'm seeing from last year and this year. When Chris Paul was absent, Cameron Payne stepped in, and sometimes it had me saying, well, I think the Suns may be playing better with Payne than they are with Paul. I mean, because Payne played that well. Right now, I mean, even the series against the Pelicans, it's like, where is that dude? Where is that campaign? I mean, dude, he only had 2 points yesterday, Brad. 2 points yesterday. He's just not looking the same. His drives to the basket, you know, he could finish with either hand last year. His drive to the basket, now he's not finishing with either one. That runner that he had, or that floater that he had in the lane, not knocking that down. That three that he had last year, you're not seeing that. I mean, if the Suns were getting anything from Cameron playing close to what we saw last year, I think the Suns would have probably taken one of the two games this weekend.
Well, and I think DeAndre Ayton goes into that conversation.
Oh, I mean, make no mistake about that. I mean, he's come up really soft in games three and four.
Yeah.
He's come up. I mean, Mikal Bridges, I mean, I'm expecting a big game from Bridges on game five Tuesday night against the Mavericks. Because if you hearken back to game five against the Pelicans, he dropped a playoff career high 30 points. I mean, he understands that he didn't get a jump. I have no worries about Bridges showing up and showing out. But DeAndre Ayton, I mean, look, man, the Suns have had a huge, huge advantage in this series, given their size. And I got to be honest, JaVale McGee is not even giving you what he's given us all season long. The Suns even had to go to playing their double bigs. I mean, McGee and Ayton on the court at the same time against New Orleans, because New Orleans was so big. They were killing the Suns on the offensive glass. Well, Dallas is a small team. And if you think that Dallas is giving you problems with their small lineups, can you only imagine what would happen if the Suns happen to get out of this series and face the Golden State Warriors? I mean, we're talking about, look, they knocked down 23-point shots Sunday, Brad. And I saw the biggest problem I saw is that they're allowing way, 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 way too much dribble penetration into the lane. The Suns are trying to collapse on that penetration. And when they collapse, they're kicking it out. And now when the Suns are trying to close out, too late. Dorian Finney-Smith, Davis Bertans, Spencer Dinwiddie.
These are all Hall of Famers, Bruce. Yeah. Those are three Hall of Famers right there, right?
I'm telling you, they are knocking down threes with a proclivity that, I mean, is unbelievable. I can only imagine what Steph Clay and, yes, Jordan Poole would do in the next series again if the Suns survive. But they have to clean up that defense. That's killing them. In addition to them not getting any offensive production from Campaign, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, and Cam Johnson like we're used to seeing them get, I mean, their defense is befuddling. Granted, I think they may have got onto something in the second half yesterday. The Mavericks scored, 68 in the first half Sunday, but only 43 in the second half yesterday. But the problem there, Brad, is the Suns only scored 45 in the second half yesterday.
Yeah.
And so it's very concerning to see what they're giving up defensively. I mean, too many 50-50 loose balls aren't going their way. They're giving up all that. I mean, they're getting even beat on the offensive glass. I think that's
points. You know, Bruce, we're talking with Bruce Cooper, chopping it up. Is it possible to start looking at how the Suns are playing, not just in this series, but against New Orleans, and understand that the regular season in the NBA doesn't mean a darn thing anymore? And that this is a team that is built for regular season, rolling up victories. But when it comes to postseason, they simply don't have enough grit. I thought Jay Crowder, JaVale McGee would give them enough grit. DeAndre Ayton, as you said, has been soft so far in this series. Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, did he play way too many minutes in the regular season and now his body just isn't quite there? Is Devin more concerned about barking at officials and getting technical fouls and talking about officials after games are over rather than just showing up, shutting up and play? Does this team have enough grit? Is it just a nice regular season team that goes and wins 60 games? We get all excited in postseason. It's not that tough.
We'll see, Brad. I may agree with you had the Suns not made the run they did to the NBA Finals last year, even going up 2-0 in the Finals. I may have agreed with you had the Suns not survived a gritty six-game series against the Pelicans in Game 1. I think everyone came out of that series saying, my goodness, New Orleans is on the come. I mean, can you imagine what they'll be like with Zion Williamson? I didn't see anyone complaining when the Suns went up 2-0 in the series against Dallas. I mean, it fell in line with what my thinking was that hey, this is a sweep, maybe a five-game series at best. But what we've seen in games 3 and 4, yes, it's alarming. It's alarming. And, Brad, I'll be willing to buy what you're selling if the Suns don't survive game 5 Tuesday night against these same Mavericks. Because there's no way we should be looking at what we're looking at right now.
Well, but in Bruce, I think just sitting here and seeing how the postseason has gone, and you know this and covering it through the years, there's no way this team photo is coming back next year the way that it is set up. Your point about Cameron Payne is well taken. You know, he's here to back up Chris Paul. Is it just now becoming very apparent he's a nice backup player? Cam Johnson has had some tremendous moments in the regular season and a few here in the postseason. But is there a reason why he's not at that elite level? I'm just looking at the roster and saying, enjoy this while you can, because the decision on giving DeAndre Ayton $200 million shouldn't be based on tearing up a team in March. It should be based on what's going on here in May. And right now, I don't see it, Bruce.
Well, as it relates to DeAndre Ayton, I thought he showed up pretty much every game in the playoffs last year. I mean, I said, wow, if the Suns can get this version of DeAndre Ayton, we're good. And so, Brad, I mean, it's very concerning. I mean, I thought he was brilliant in the Pelican series. I mean, he's knocking down those free throw line jumpers, those turnarounds, those jump hooks. I mean, he put on a show. And so now that he has a tremendous advantage, Brad, a tremendous advantage in the paint in this series, I mean, where is he?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. The Suns should be dominating this series in the paint. But conversely, they're allowing the Mavericks to penetrate the paint and actually, you know, make it a pretty competitive game in terms of who has the most points in the paint. But now Dallas is taking it to a second level. When Luka was scoring a lot of the points in the paint, he wasn't getting any help on the perimeter. Now he's kicking it out And I don't know if it's those guys going home and feeling more confident at home, but I mean, Brad, I mean, 20 of 44 from three yesterday. I mean, between Finney Smith, Bertans, Dinwiddie, Kleber, and Bullock, every one of those five guys, and as you mentioned, none of them are Hall of Famers, you know, they're all shooting 40% or more beyond the three-point arc. Are you kidding me? This Suns team does not – they're one of the – I think, what, were they the third best defensive team in the league? Oh, Brad, there's some major, major cleanup and adjustments that must be made before game five. Otherwise, if this Suns team falters in this series against the Mavericks, Brad, I'm going to buy everything you talked about in terms of a roster makeover for next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Bruce, they'd rather see Luka score 60 than him get 20 and have 11 assists where he's finding guys wide open. It's like, you want to score 70? Go score 70. We'll beat you if you score 70. And Dallas has adjusted on that. The first two games was the Luka show, and it's okay. And so now what does Monty Williams do? This comes down to, look, I thought Willie Green outcoached Monty in a couple of those games with the Pels. And okay, he knows the Sun system. I'll give him that. Last two games, Monty has not had the answer for his team to respond.
No, and you know, Brad, I think what it really comes down to is the energy, you know, especially on the defensive end of the floor. I mean, why is Dallas, you know, scoring 15 second chance points? I mean, I saw a couple of instances in when the Suns, in Sunday's game three, you got two or three guys, Ayton and maybe Crowder, they're blocking their men out. The ball goes, they just stay with their man. They don't even go towards the ball. So that loose ball now is a scramble. Dallas winds up with it, kick it out, three-pointer. And I mean, instead of you having possession, put three more points on the board for Dallas. I mean, go get the ball. I mean, at least I know Torrey Craig didn't play in games three and four, and he's one of those guys that offensively is not playing like he did a year ago. But that fella, he's like Bismack Biyombo. He's not going to short you on energy and hustle on the defensive end of the ball. He'll go after those defensive rebounds. He'll go for those 50-50 loose balls. Right now, that's killing the Phoenix Suns. They're not getting those, coming up with those energy moments, those energy plays that get the Suns going in transition offensively the other way.
All right. Good stuff. As always, how is St. Vincent de Paul? What are you doing over at St. Vincent de Paul? For those that don't know, saying I miss Coop on 12 News, Bruce is all over the place. He's doing lots of things. How's St. Vincent de Paul?
Well, you know, St. Vincent de Paul, we have what we call 100 days of summer, which is actually going to start later this month on Memorial Day. And what that is, Brad, is that each month, I mean, the month of June is a water drive. The month of July will be a food drive. The month of August will be a shelter drive. So, you know, food, water, shelter. Though we're honing in on raising water and food and trying to find shelter for heat relief for the homeless people out there. And so 100 days of summer, Brad, we're going to be in high gear trying to ramp up what we do on a daily basis.
It's good stuff. Bruce Cooper, we appreciate your time and your insight as always. Stay safe.
Thank you so much, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout.